Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast, the new talk in Podcast 361. Just so you know what's going on, this is probably the third or fourth time I've done this podcast. So if I sound a little short, it's not because I'm angry about the content. It is because I'm dealing with some technical things that I've had to redo this a couple different times, and this never happens. I don't like redoing podcasts because... I like to be as authentic as possible when I do the podcast, so that's what I'm dealing with behind the scenes here. But the other thing is, this is one of those topics that, honestly, I didn't want to talk about. One of the reasons it's so late is that rather than do a podcast tonight, I went and had coffee with a friend because I wanted to talk about the music business, and I wanted to talk about undo and deal with anything other than this situation in Baltimore that everybody's talking about and everybody's commenting on, and it's one of those things that we used to call the elephant in the room in talk radio. There's two components to this. One is that generally it's been my experience that when you don't want to talk about something, it's something that you should talk about. The other thing is sometimes the thing that everybody is talking about is the thing that you need to talk about. The big problem that I have with doing that is most of the time we commentators, whether we're on talk radio or in podcasting, really don't have much to add to the situation because facts on the ground are going to change and things are going to change and opinions are going to change. And sometimes I just like to leave things go. But there are components of the Baltimore story that I think are worth talking about. So we'll give it a shot in podcast 361. I haven't talked about 3D printing in a while. I'm going to talk about technology and 3D printing a little bit in this podcast because I think it brings not necessarily 3D printing, but technology because it has a bearing on things. And I'm going to bring it up. But when I talk about 3D printing, generally when I talk about additive manufacturing, I end up talking about Bocklund R&D. So if you're in manufacturing, if you need tools, parts, or product manufacturing, you already know additive manufacturing. 3D printing is catching the imagination of the whole country. But did you know that Bocklund R&D is one of the few manufacturers that knows how to use 3D printing to the best advantage of their clients? Check out Bocklund.com for lots of resources that show you how to do what they do and how they do it. And for John Bocklund's webinar in June of this year, I think it's June 21st, 2015, on this very subject, sponsored by Stratasys, the great 3D printer and manufacturer. John's going to show you how Bocklund uses 3D printing to provide prototypes and finished working products to clients that can be pressed right into service on the floor. It's a new world, and Bocklund is on the cutting edge of the new world when it comes to 3D printing and additive manufacturing. And of course, remember, wicked fast turnaround times, innovative solutions, real client service, and real resources about Bocklund at Bocklund.com. Two things. First of all, contact Joe Dorn or Andy Black at Bocklund.com and ask what they can do for you. Find out what energy, wisdom, knowledge, and imagination can do for your company today. And second, the website to look at those resources at Bocklund.com, B-A-K-L-U-N-D.com, Bocklund.com. So let's start with the facts as we currently know them. About 2 weeks ago, a Baltimore citizen by the name of Freddie Gray, 25 years old, was taken into custody for possessing a switchblade knife. According to reports, he ran from the police and resisted arrest. We don't know why, or at least I haven't read anything that says why. Sometime during the arrest, he received a spinal injury. And he died a week later from that injury. Six police officers involved in pursuit and arrest put on leave, and an investigation is underway as we speak. We don't know all the facts yet. It will be some time before we know all the facts. And like all of these situations recently, with two exceptions, and even those are also fluid, the facts come to light later show the situation to be quite different from what it was originally portrayed by or as as in the media and by protesters after, even to a certain extent by family members in some cases. I am somewhat insensitive to these things because generally it's been my experience that the stories change. So I hate commenting on man's inhumanity to man or the injustices of, and for years I have avoided this because the worst thing you can do is start commenting about a news story that's in the state of flux because new facts are coming to light or new facts will come to light. We don't know specifically what happened. We don't know what caused the back injury. We don't know if it was an injury that was something that he'd had previously. There's a whole lot of questions associated with this. Anyway, after Gray's funeral, which I think was Sunday, rioting broke out in Baltimore. I don't think it's that important that I know where specifically it broke out. My understanding is it was near the baseball stadium during the baseball game, and that it later spread to Baltimore's west side. Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake decided to take a soft approach. In the wake of that, she had an unfortunate quote in the media in which she said that she was giving these people space to destroy, which she first denied, and then she later admitted that she said it, but she tried to explain why she said what she said. And then she finally, after three or four, I guess it was 3 or 4 days, finally called the governor for the National Guard. He was prepared and ready. The Guard is out. Some 2,000 National Guard soldiers on the scene in Baltimore. And as far as I know now, it's fairly calm. The mayor is being blamed from all corners right now. I saw a lot of negative comments on Facebook from every type of person regarding this. So she's definitely got a target on her back at this point. In all the coverage, you know, there was a lot of things that struck me, one of which was the mother who slapped her son for, you know, rioting and looting. The other was the Marine that said, I'm not black, I'm an American. The other was the guy that was taking the video that said, I don't support this kind of nonsense, regardless of what happened to this individual. And then there was the comments from one Sadie Parker, a 25-year-old hair salon owner, quoted in a story that I read, in which she said, the president should not be sitting around and eating and having fun while our country is at war. And then she said, which I think this is really revealing and instructive about the state that our country is in. She said, quote, he needs to step in. He needs to get the people who are misusing their authority out of office. It's not just the cops. It's the whole government. Now, it's very interesting to me because Baltimore is 63% black. The mayor is black. The police commissioner and most of the cops are black. Most of the reporters on TV and on the scene were black. Blacks are well represented in city and state legislatures in Maryland, but that did not matter. So this is not a Ferguson situation where the whole, you know, where you might be able to say that it's a white government and it's unresponsive and doesn't understand African-American issues. The whole city of Baltimore is black, and it has been for a long time. So this is very interesting that they're saying the same thing about the government of Baltimore that they were saying about Ferguson. It doesn't seem to matter to them what the race of the leadership is. It's about the getting rid of the leadership or railing at the leadership. And you know, there are some who just don't like the suggestion that these rioters are thugs. This particular woman, Parker, was really upset because Stephanie Rawlings Blake called them thugs and rioters. But it's impossible to deny that they destroyed what people of the same race and the same culture worked very hard in West Baltimore to build up for 30 or 40 years. Family friends, you know, people that my son befriended in Baltimore when he was going to school there, who were older, you know, African-American couple, he sent them a text over the weekend and said, hey, I'm really sorry to hear what's going on in Baltimore. What's your take on this? And they said, you know, we feel for Freddie Gray and his family, and we don't know what happened there, but this is appalling. This is appalling destruction. And then you have the president who seems to condemn the rioters and yet defends them. And it provokes this question about whether or not we are developing a double standard in this country for criminals and the so-called poor, particularly the black poor. I guess if a black person dies in custody, then rioting is okay if it serves a purpose of helping people to remember the individual's name, whether it is in New York or whether it's in Baltimore, whether it's in Ferguson, whether it's a situation where the police made a mistake or whether it's a situation where the police were willful or whether it's a situation where the police were doing their job. The president was supposed to be a symbol of change and opportunity, and he has, in fact, in my view, divided the country more than he has healed it. The reality is that in his time, what has happened is because of the many different problems that have developed, whether it's government getting in everybody's face, telling people what to eat, the bad lunches from the First Lady, the IRS investigating people. There is disrespect for law and government across this country, and not just in the ghettos and not just in Baltimore. And when you have all this disrespect for law and government, then when you have a weak point, it's going to produce a reaction. You're going to have a breakdown. Now, black people in this country have talked about a double standard when it comes to the police and the courts for years, and I think that it's fair to say that to a certain extent, there is a double standard. But it's also true that a large proportion of crimes are committed by young black men in cities like Baltimore, and that chiefly the victims are also black people. And, the people in Baltimore, the citizens of Baltimore, who are dealing with black police and black leadership and black neighbors of all, income groups, don't particularly like being broken into and messed with by criminals, regardless of their color. Now, if you want to talk about the double standard, I'll tell you this. The reasons for it are deep. They're emotional. They are not easily fixed. We've been dealing with it for a long time in this country. It has gotten better. It's gotten worse. But the problems are going to continue. But the reality is, we can't have two sets of laws and procedures for every different group of people, whether you're on the, let's say, insensitive conservative side, which looks upon this as just criminal acts and that they should be punished, or if you're on the side of people who believe that the police are prejudiced against them. We can't have two sets of laws for different groups of people. As I said, this is a black administration. It's a black police force generally, and you hear the same criticism leveled at them as you heard in Ferguson. And it isn't just racism, if that's the problem at all. The general conservative view is that slow economic performance is killing opportunity and productivity. But the reality is it's going to get worse, and it's going to get worse because unskilled labor is oversupplied in this country. No matter how many minimum wage laws you pass, we are needing fewer and fewer unskilled laborers. The pressure points where the unskilled laborers live, where they're dealing with the difficulties of life on the lower end of the spectrum, is where it's going to break. And if and when it fully breaks, it will be too late to fix it. If you want an example of that, the rumor in Baltimore is that the gangs are all going to unite to take on the police. And if that happens, not only do we have a big problem, we have a national security problem. And that can't be allowed to happen. So that's the kind of break that I'm talking about. That's just, it's too late to fix it, and it has to be addressed. Given the technology changes that I talk a lot about coming in our society, the question becomes, what will these people do, regardless of color, if they have no skills, no future, and they're not employable? And even eventually the simplest jobs will not be available for them because at most businesses, for example, fast food, instead of an army of workers, you'll have an army of machines and three or four workers whose job is to watch the machines, run the machines, and make sure the place is clean. So what's going to happen then is you're going to see really chaotic results from these technology changes in our country. And they're coming. They're unavoidable. We can't stop them. A lot of people think it will be an orderly, happy experience, and I talk about it as though it will be a happy experience, but it's going to be chaotic, and I think we're seeing that in various spaces. When you have a group of unskilled people, it's really up to the individual to pull themselves out of it. They can't be helped even by their own people trying to do right by their communities, and if you're dealing with a criminal class, then they positively can't be helped by their own people trying to do right by their communities. So essentially what you're talking about is a permanent underclass. We saw that in riots recently, and when I say recently, the last couple of years in England, where people were shocked to see these people just looking almost like demons and acting like demons. And then for the people who are honest, who don't want to have anything to do with those people, who have honest jobs, the question for them is how do you get them out and keep them honest and give them opportunity when their neighbors who are criminals are beyond reason? Now, I know that in Baltimore, there was a big issue about agitators, outside agitators. The mayor blamed it on outside agitators. You know, the president said it's counterproductive to the issue. I think these are just bad people who think that agitating and making an issue out of it is somehow helping their cause. We need to know who they were. We need to know what their motivation is. We need to know who helped them. And those people need to be arrested and prosecuted and punished because they're all guilty of inciting a riot and doing damage, great damage, to a largely black community in Baltimore and a great black community. The question is, when does this become a national security problem? You have people saying they want the president to step in and remove a legally elected government of a major city or any city because they are so frustrated. Well, what's the trigger for doing that? Incompetence? What happens if Mussolini becomes president, unless you think he already is president? Does he remove the leadership of Chicago because he doesn't like them? So it's a very slippery slope on this issue. And I think part of it is that leaders don't know what to do. Police commissioners and mayors really don't know what to do. When does the need for civil order overcome fear of acting? If you look at Stephanie Rawlings Blake's comments, you know, it seemed like she was trying to avoid deploying militarized police, similar to what happened in Ferguson, and fanning the flames. And so, I think she felt if she backed off, it would die out. Well, it didn't. I mean, the LAPD did that during the riots in LA in whatever it was, 1990 or 91. So, it isn't the first time someone's made that kind of a decision. Of course, everyone's blaming her for it. But when you are afraid to act as a public official, that's something that we need to talk about. That's a question about how much of a role that factored in here, how much of a role that played and how it factored in, because I think that's really, really important. We do not want to paralyze these people because they're afraid of retribution from special interest groups and snark and trolling. I talked about this in relation to the correspondence dinner the other night, and I've said for a long time that politicians are out of touch. They seem to want to go to celebrity roasts and get rich and famous and running for presidential office. You have something like 12 Republicans running for president, and really, I think most of them are running for president so they can get rich and famous. Obviously, Hillary Clinton is running for president because it's going to make her foundation and her husband more rich and more famous, if it's at all possible. People who started out and lifted themselves up by their bootstraps through the largesse of government and disgustingly continue to try to enrich themselves at the public trough. You know, and then we have the media, which wants to participate and be the news as well as be news maker. So then we get to this whole question of, well, who or what do we blame for this? First of all, without question, the rioters and the people who incited them are to blame, and they need to be found, arrested, punished, convicted and punished, because we need to know that people are not going to get away with this. Secondly, I have to say that I blame the president to a certain degree, because if he really wanted to do something about this, he could lend his considerable weight to actually doing something about it. And what does he do? He comes out and he tells the American people that we have to do some soul searching. And I think he's the one who needs to do some soul searching. And I speak for myself. I'm not saying that this is a pair of stone tablets handed down from the Temple on the Mount. I think that the president is mean-spirited, divisive, and partisan most of the time. He tends to be a divider and not a uniter, to be quite honest with you. Instead of being a bipartisan guy, instead of actually stepping up to the plate, he has put his time and effort into things like the Iran deal and complaining about Congress and blaming other people in situations for really what are his shortcomings. And it's dangerous because these things are not working. You know, if Obamacare is his greatest achievement, he gets a D plus. If you're talking about the stimulus, it's an F because it didn't do much. And then when we talk about all of the things that he sponsored, the banking regulations and the progressive ideas, we're seeing then they are falling far short of what was projected. When we get into foreign policy, we see all kinds of problems as the result. And then, honestly, I have to ask this question. Why do poor people in Baltimore, or really anywhere, think that they have anything in common with a rich academic from Hawaii? Secondly, or thirdly, I'm not quite sure which because I'm not keeping track, maybe you are, nobody is happy about his observations on the big media stories. He does little after the fact about any particular problem. Josh Ernst, the president's press secretary, said, I think yesterday, the federal government can't solve this, and yet he acts as though he can solve it by a blue ribbon panel or more free college or free community college or something to that effect. Those things are not going to fix this problem. These are deep, deep problems, whether they're criminal problems or they're social problems that are not going to get fixed. And they're not going to get fixed because somebody gets free community college education when, you know, we've poured money into education in urban areas all over this country, and it isn't making any difference. And creating a double standard for violence and poor performance doesn't help those people in those positions either. Bottom line here is either this whole situation calms down or it's going to get worse. And if it gets worse, we're going to have a real problem to deal with. The other thing that I blame, to be quite honest with you, are the perfumed royals in the media. Because while they were having their correspondence dinner, Rome was literally burning. So while the news media fiddled at the correspondence dinner, Rome literally burned. And if it isn't the perfumed princes and princesses at the correspondence dinner, it is the hungry reporters who are running out to get their war reporting ticket punched with little effort to determine the true nature of the story as it happens. And if you want examples, look at Ferguson, where everything they reported was later proven wrong, and not just wrong, but destructively wrong, because the whole city was nearly destroyed in that particular area because somebody thought something that wasn't true concerning the individual who was killed by the police. Nobody ever says, I never hear these reporters say, let's not pass judgment until we have the facts. In fact, we're not going to cover this until we know what is actually going on. We'll simply tell you there's a riot in Baltimore, but we're going to wait till the facts are in to talk about it. They'll never do that. They're going to cover it because there's burning buildings and people throwing things, and it's a spectacle. And, you know, the media likes to say things like, well, people don't do this to get on television. Yes, they do. And that's one of the things that's the most egregious thing about what happened, particularly since we're talking about a community that was that was being built up by people, white people and black people working together. And I've seen the whole country recently, and there are places, believe it or not, where people of different cultures live and work together peacefully all the time. I have found most places in this country to be filled with very nice people that really want to help each other, and despite the fact that there's jerks here and there, generally live and work together peacefully. There are places that work. In fact, Baltimore used to be one of those places that worked, and I think that it will again be one of those places that work. And if you had to ask me to bet on somebody in this deal, it wouldn't be the president. It won't be the new attorney general. It won't be the federal government. It'll be the people of Baltimore that will solve this problem. I very strongly feel that in every age, there's a moment when things were one way and then they suddenly changed. And I think we're real, real, real close to a moment of change. I think, first of all, I think the government has to get out of the way long enough for people to start taking responsibility themselves. We have a terrible media in this country that ill serves us, that doesn't tell us the truth. truth, that doesn't report the news, that pushes for the most lurid headline and detail that it can find, whether it's Bruce Jenner in his sex change operation, which I don't see how that's news, or this situation in Baltimore. The bottom line is, and this is something that I feel very strongly, and I've just kind of come to this conclusion in the last, 78 hours, let's say, the last few days. I think we're at a low point in American politics. I don't think we're at a low point in America. I think we're at a low point with people who would like to be our leaders and who pretend to be our leaders. But the truth is, I don't see any leaders anywhere, whether it's the state legislatures, maybe a couple of places where there's governors that step up to the plate. I mean, I have to say the Maryland governor stepped up to the plate. Maybe there's some other places where they exist. Maybe Don Schaefer, the former mayor of Baltimore, would have dealt with this differently, but he was mayor at a different time. So I don't see any leaders on either side of the fence who are really in touch with this enough that they can reach out and really help. On the other hand, and I said this weekend, I don't know how I can criticize politicians, these days, because the minute they step out and try to solve a problem, they are attacked by their own, and they're attacked by, it's the trolls and it's the nasty people and it's the jerks that come out of the woodwork and represent the worst of the body politic in this country. And so my interpretation of this is that a seminal event can't be far away for this country, and I don't think it's a good one. I think we will be lucky. Let's just put it this way. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again, and I feel it very strongly right now. And honestly, I don't think it's because I'm psychic. I think maybe part of it is that I read so much that subconsciously I connect the dots before things happen. But I'm not going to say that this is a prediction, but I don't see how the Obama administration doesn't end in tragedy and failure, because I just don't think that he is a great leader at all. I think he's a terrible president. I've thought it for a long time. And I think people on the left and people that thought that he was their leader are beginning to realize what a terrible president he has been for them in terms of economics, in terms of creating opportunity for them, or at least creating conditions that create opportunity. He's mismanaged the economy terribly. 1% growth and slow growth and year after year after year, and pretending that it's a recovery is terrible for people. And I don't care where they live, whether it's Appalachia or Wyoming or Baltimore or West Baltimore. Truthfully, I don't know what is going to come next with this president. Even the Iran thing is literally falling apart in as we speak. So I don't see how the Obama administration ends well, and there's going to be a lot of pieces to pick up, and it's going to be a lot worse than Jimmy Carter's exit from the presidency, and I think it's going to be a lot worse than Bill Clinton's exit from the presidency in that respect. On the other hand, I don't think talking about the biblical republic and the Constitution and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams is necessarily as productive as it might have been 5 years ago, and I don't think talking about Marx or carrying pictures of Chairman now or unions is necessarily productive either. I see a country where, on a personal level, people are the same as they've always been. They're open, good people who want to help each other, and they just want to live their lives and be left alone. On the other hand, you see a lot of people who want to fight. Nobody wants to agree. Nobody wants to think about agreeing. Nobody wants to talk. Nobody wants to take it upon themselves to talk. And everybody seems to want to win a rhetorical argument and have this fight. And if there's one thing I've learned about history in this country, and it is that if people want a fight, they will get a fight. The worry and concern is that, and I'll leave you with this, if you keep spoiling for a fight, you may get one. It just may not be the fight that you expected you were going to get, and it may be a lot worse than what you expected you were going to get. And if we don't wake up in this country and start to individually begin to work with our neighbors and our friends, and even those we don't agree with, to create a better community, a better town, and a better country, we are going to be in the fight of our lives, and it will be unexpected, and it will not be pleasant. All right, thanks to John Bachland for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 361. I mentioned 3D printing. I mentioned that John is going to be doing a webinar sponsored by the great 3D printer maker Stratasyst on, I believe, June 21st on Bachland.com, which is going to tell you all about how you can use 3D printing to really help your business. Bachland has had a lot of experience over the last year or two or three in learning to use 3D printing to the best advantage of their clients. And John's willing to share that both with clients and also competitors if they want to know more about how 3D printing works in the manufacturer. It's a great thing to check out. And of course, don't forget to contact Joe Dorn or Andy Bleck at Bachland.com and find out what they can do for you. And also check out the resources at Bachland.com, B-A-K-L-U-N-D.com, Bachland.com. And thanks to the digital sponsors of the Bob Davis Podcast, Mad Case Studios, specializing in quality original automotive artwork. Ken Madden is Mad Case Studios. If you click on that banner, it will take you directly to the Facebook page for Mad Case Studios. They're going to be at a lot of these antique car shows this summer. I'll tell you more about that as we get going. Click on these and other banners of the Bob Davis sponsors at thebobdavispodcast.com for more information. Thanks, you guys, for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn, and Blog Talk Radio. All the links are right there at thebobdavispodcast.com. And thanks for liking, sharing, favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And thank you for your donations. The big yellow donate button at thebobdavispodcast.com.
Beat up little seagull on a marble step, trying to find the ocean, looking everywhere. Hard times in the city, in a hard time by the sea. Ain't nowhere to run to, ain't nothing here for free. Junk lying on the sidewalk, sleeping in the rain. And I hide your faces, and I hide.